Wake up, America!
Wake up, America. It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in. That's right. This is episode 399 of the Freedom Fiends. Episode 399 of the unauthorized ongoing biography of Michael W. Dean. That's me. I had something pretty amazing happen to me today, but we're going to get there. We're going to talk to Davi Barker, our West Coast correspondent, our head hippie correspondent out there in hippie land. How are you and how is hippie land, Davi Barker?
I believe we call this the left coast.
Yeah.
It is also the 493rd anniversary of the Edict of Worms.
It is. It's happy Wormrin Day to you. Happy St. Wormrin Day to you, too. It is a holiday today. And
I think it's Worms is the pronunciation.
Yeah, but. And it's my 50th birthday for another, let's say 53 minutes. So it is
On some parts of the planet.
Yeah. So it is the Diet of Worms. It is the anniversary of the Diet of Worms. And we like to say the word worms.
Worms.
I'll give a refresher course in why we say that. There's a guy named David Immergluck who plays in a band called Counting Crows. You know them, Davi?
Yeah, I know the Counting Crows.
Yeah, a lot of people call them.
I was never much of a fan, but I know them.
A lot of people call them the Counting Sheep. David Immergluck, one of the guitar players in the band, used to play in my short-lived band Slish in the early 90s when I was first getting sober. That band broke up because it was like David Immergluck and Michael Urbano and myself and this guy named Bean. Bean and I were like freshly sober and we were nuts. We like hadn't learned how to function sober yet and we were just screaming all the time, and so those guys, you know, went off and played on some number one albums instead of dealing with us. But back then, you know, it was already way, way out of fashion to say word, meaning, you know, the hip-hop thing of meaning like, yes, you speak the truth, you speak the word.
I extremely agree.
Yes, you are true, brother. You know, so he would say, as a joke, he'd say worms when he agreed with you. And I forgot about that for like 15 years, and I started doing this show, Freedom Fiends, with Nima Vedati, who's a rapper. And, you know, we would kind of do this like skit at the beginning where he would sound genuinely like a rapper and real street and cool, and I'd try to be like the old white guy trying to sound cool, and I'd be like, worms, and it caught on. So what is the Diet of Worms? That sounds horrible. What is it?
It's, well, it doesn't refer to the I don't even know. Is a worm an insect? It doesn't refer to the life form. It refers to Worms, Germany, which is that was
pretty cool to me to learn that there's a place called Worms, Germany.
Yeah,
spelled it's probably Worms, but it's spelled Worms. It's a city. It's still a city. We could
it's still there. Yeah,
let's go.
We
there.
Should visit. We should live Freedom Fiends broadcast from Worms. Mm-hmm. But it is the day that Martin Luther was declared a heretic.
I'm a fan of the Holy Roman Emperor. I'm a big fan of Martin Luther, even though I'm not a big fan of churches or religion, because Martin Luther didn't like things about the Catholic Church and wanted to start his own church. He's basically the father of Protestantism. And
he's a religious secessionist.
Yes, yes. He said, I don't like the way y'all do it. I could do it better. And he wrote down 99 theses or 99 ideas and nailed them to the church door. What a cool like act of, you know, almost aggression, but not even, more like, I guess he was like the Robin Hooder of his day. He was doing political activism.
It's a kind of civil disobedience, I suppose. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's definitely truth to power, though. Like, it is a very, like nailing things to the church door is still kind of a symbol of, like, I'm making a declaration, you know?
I feel like the Freedom Fiends are nailing things to the door of talk radio.
We're nailing our message to the door of the Church of the State.
We're nailing the lightning. We're nailing the lightning. I'm burying the lead. We'll get back to worms, but lightning struck in my backyard today while DJ and I were watching a movie, and it sounded like someone discharged a shotgun next to my head, and it blew my mind. And there's pictures. If you go to the Freedom Fiends blog, freedomfiends.com/blog, there's photos we took. They're not stellar. They're not mind-blowing, but there's a big stripe down the tree where it blew the bark off. And I'm really glad the cat wasn't out there because it probably would have gotten impaled by flying bark. But it was, you know, pretty cool to, like, live to 50 after the life I've had up to 30 that could have killed me every day from, like, age 20 to 30, and then live, get sober, get, you know, get sensible, and then start, like, tilting at the government. I thought it was a drone for about a quarter of a second, but we'll talk more about that. I want to talk about Happy Wormrin Day and the diet of worms and Martin Luther and how he's the coolest Protestant ever.
I don't get why it's called the diet of worms. Was this like what people ate in Worms, Germany? I don't get why it's called that. But
no, imperial diet was a meeting, wasn't it? It was It was a general assembly. The German word for diet is Reichstag. That's the other word for it. Yeah.
So it's the Reichstag of worms.
The diet fire. Yeah. Yep. It basically means a Congress. It's a meeting, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. We're having a diet of libertarianism here tonight.
A diet of fiends.
We're thin libertarians having a diet of worms.
What else is on your mind?
I want to talk more about Martin Luther. What do you think of Martin Luther?
I like Martin Luther. I like, you know, I'm not even a Christian, but I like statements of individual spiritual conviction a lot throughout history. And there's examples of this in a lot of different religions and a lot of different sort of empires and sort of movements throughout history. But Martin Luther still kind of stands out as a pinnacle of this sort of thing. And I think it's a good thing because what it really does is it brings the religion back to the individual. It sort of like throws away the building and the hierarchy and the structure that's built on top of an original message, and it says, no, this is about the individual without any intermediary, without any sort of ruler. People have their own spiritual tradition, and I think that's what all the religions were supposed to be.
And Martin Luther King Jr. is named after his father, who's named after Martin Luther. That's a pretty good, you know, for the things that Martin Luther King did, that's a pretty good name for him, because he was kind of nailing his hope and change to the door.
He was nailing his letters to the wall in Birmingham jail.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know he applied for a pistol carry permit and got turned down?
No, yep. I didn't know that.
Yep. Although it probably wouldn't have helped him. Pistols don't help much against rifles.
And I'm assassins.
I'm not making a joke, and I'm not being, clever. Yeah. I think the best thing is to just not irk people. Not pee people off enough to want to shoot you in the head with a deer rifle. Although,
well, you know, Malcolm X didn't bother applying for a permit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He just carried, I love that picture of him with it's an M30 and M1 carbine, that little 30 cal rifle he had.
Oh, like peeking out the window.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great photo.
That's the same rifle that, Patty Hearst robbed a bank with.
Cool. Robbing a bank is not cool.
Robbing a bank's not cool, but self-defense is cool, and I believe that's what Martin Luther, Malcolm X was into.
Well, yeah, absolutely. He wasn't aggressive. In fact, he was very instrumental in harnessing or reining in the anger that was resulting in aggressive behavior and transforming it into like very viable nonviolent political activism through discipline. Even though he didn't eschew defensive violence, and he never said he was a pacifist, he still took a lot of the sort of populist anger and made it into something very disciplined and very effective. And I've always really admired that.
I don't think Martin Luther King or Malcolm X would dig Obama much. It's hard to say, you know, what a person would think.
Not.
But why don't you?
Malcolm X Well, Malcolm X sort of explicitly said not to trust the Democrats. There's a quote from him that is something to the effect of, the Republicans are like wolves and the Democrats are like foxes, and I prefer the wolf who's overtly aggressive to me than the fox who invites me into his den and eats me in secret.
Wow. Yeah, and he was a well-armed sheep deciding he didn't want to be dinner.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know where Martin Luther King stood on the party system or whatever, but I don't think either of them would like Obama. If anything, I have a dream speech. It's the I have a dream of when we will not be judged by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character. That is the opposite of what the civil rights movement has become. So
yeah. I don't think he'd like Obama's warmongering either. I don't think Martin Luther King would at all. He was anti-war. Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah, they both were.
I don't think he'd like the Obama's ever increasing creep of the powers of the secret powers of the federal government either. As someone who was, do you know about the letters that the FBI sent to Martin Luther King?
The ones threatening to expose his affair?
Yeah, and told him to just kill himself.
Yeah, they told him to commit suicide or they would expose that he was having an affair. And I think they orchestrated the affair too, didn't they?
I don't know. Probably.
I thought that they did. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But, yeah, I mean, they do lots of nasty things before they assassinate you, allegedly.
Allegedly. I don't know. They're proud that they assassinate people. The CIA murders people, and like the CIA cooperates with people making Hollywood movies about CIA people who kill people. They want you to think they're scary and murderous. Maybe they're not, and that's just no, they are.
Well, I don't know if it's Malcolm X's grandson or great grandson. I think it's his grandson, but he's still active in Oakland. He's he's a commie spokesperson. And I was at a talk that he gave, and there was an old man in the back of the room who like started sort of yelling, like he needed the floor, and he started telling the room about how he saw the man who assassinated Malcolm X. And that he knew who it was and he could identify him, and he knew that he was working with the police and he suspected that he was CIA. And this is just like anecdotal, but this guy was certain about it. So there's definitely things like that that happen.
Yeah. We'll be back with more on the Lightning Report on the Freedom Fiends After Dark with Davy Barker and Michael Dean. Worms.
Worms.
Diet of worms.
You are destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Yeah. So, This is Michael Dean.
So,
Freedom Fiend. And before my wife goes to bed, I want her to tell, so people don't think I made this up, so it'd have to be at least two people making it up, and it's not. DJ's going to tell about the lightning strike today. Here you go, baby.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes. Oh, hi, Davi. How you doing?
How's it going?
By the way, I don't have headphones on, so I can't hear you, but.
Okay, I'll
anyway,
keep down.
Yeah, as Michael said, we were sitting here watching a movie, had the blinds closed for better viewing, and we had thunderstorms predicted today, but it's, you know, May, June in Wyoming, and that's what happens. But all of a sudden, there was a tremendous crash, followed almost immediately by what sounded like a brick hitting either the window or the wall of the house, and we both looked around and thought, what in goodness gracious was that? And, you know, was that lightning? What was it? And then wandered outside and saw a big strip, you know, like foot long by 3 inches wide, big chunks of bark laying all over the yard, and looked at the tree and thought, wow, you know, okay, it broke last October from the snowstorm, but I don't see anything new. And then we noticed a huge stripe up the center trunk of the tree. Oh, 50 feet long. 50? Where?
No.
Yeah.
30?
No. Huh? But, you know, as tall as the tree, where the bark had just been blasted off of it in a shower of bark bits all over
Barknull.
The yard. Yes, barknull. Anyway, so, yes, it happened. It was loud and scary and quite impressive.
Yes. Thank you, Deborah Jean. All right. So, it happened.
So, the Dean home has been blessed by Thor on your 50th birthday.
Yes. Thor was wishing me a happy birthday. Yeah. And there are pictures at the Freedom Fiends blog at freedomfiends.com/blog. And when you're at freedomfiends.com, click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent Fiends episodes. And you can scroll down and click on the Davi Barker's Shiny Badges link and go get wonderful shiny badges. And you're also making some buttons. Tell me about the buttons.
Yeah, I'm making these. So this is a sort of a decentralized project, but I call it the Porcupine Freedom Scouts. And it's the idea that sort of libertarian and ANCAP parents sort of want to raise their kids to sort of question authority and question obedience. And there are things that we can do now that we're a big enough community and we're sort of connected and we're not all isolated and throwing our kids into public schools. And so I want to create a kind of merit system like the Boy Scouts to sort of to mark sort of firsts for our young libertarian activist kids. Things like your first act of civil disobedience, your first Bitcoin wallet, your first appearance on a podcast, things like that.
Your first time at the principal's audience. If you're in public school, we have one for kids who are still in public school.
Your first parent-teacher conference, give them a merit badge. there's the Emperor Wears No Clothes badge for speaking truth to power. There's the Honey Badger badge for engaging in a gray market transaction. There's the on the job, on the record for filming interactions with government officials. There's 10 of them, and I'm making these for Porkfest. This is the first time, but I'm sure the number will grow, and eventually I'll make patches. I'll make sort of more substantive badges like Boy Scout stuff, but right now they're just 1-inch buttons, and I'm going to kind of gauge the popularity of them.
You should make one for radio, for whether it's syndicated radio or amateur radio, or, you know, running, having a ham radio for emergency, helping people without the government, anything like that.
There's the bookworm badge.
Yeah, which is me, which I'm very proud to be a part of that. It looks like me even older, but, you know, I shaved my head yesterday, so I kind of look more like the worm now in that.
Oh, yeah.
So this was an idea. You should make one of radio, though, because the Boy Scouts and the military both have badges for radio, and they both have a lightning bolt. Yeah. They both have a lightning bolt on them.
It's a sign from Thor.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea. Maybe a microphone getting hit by lightning.
Have a badge for being within 50 feet of a lightning strike. Yeah, that's not really merit. That's kind of, well, I think that I probably did better than I wouldn't have without some preparation, because When I was going to get on radio, I paid an electrician to come in this house and fix all the grounding in it because it was a mess. Not everything was grounded.
Oh, yeah. Maybe.
And I also.
Maybe that saved your life.
Maybe it saved my life. And the power did flicker off for a minute. And I think I definitely saved all my gear because I went out and spent a bunch of money on a bunch of surge protectors for everything, all my gear. So, yeah, man, we'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. And yes, we're broadcasting this message into space.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to announce the second annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It's at the Circle Pines Center just outside Kalamazoo, Friday, August 22nd through Monday, August 25th. There will be family and grown-up friendly activities, great conversation, presentations, and bacon. Lots of bacon. It doesn't matter if you're an OG libertarian, a newbie, or just anarcho-curious. Come on out and enjoy some voluntarism. For more information, go to miplc.org.
Yes. Freedom Fiends. Talking zombies here on the Freedom Fiends. I'm not really much of a zombie guy, but my buddy... My good friend, who I haven't met yet, Davi Barker, I feel like we're becoming good friends, and we're going to meet, and we can really, Davi can meet me and go, I don't like that guy in person. So, you created these badges. Are they online yet? You sent them to me, but are they on your website yet?
You know what? I didn't create this group, but this group exists now, and it's the Porcupine Freedom Scouts Facebook group, and I've been posting the images there. So other people who are interested in this concept went ahead and created the group without me and then invited me to it.
Cool.
So means that it's a meme with some legs.
Yeah. Can I post a picture of this on the show notes tonight of your 9 badges?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So you created the idea for these badges. And then I was telling you about this thing we used to do in Cub Scouts where you'd have your Wolverine badge. And it's the badge you get just for joining. Is it the Wolverine badge?
Bobcat
badge. Yeah. And
yeah,
you know, it's the first badge you get. You don't have to do anything to get it. You just join the Scouts and you get it. And it's not an official thing. It's not in the Boy Scout manual, but it's a thing that a meme, you know, pre-computer meme that had spread among.
It's a custom.
A custom, yeah. That you, when you put your little uniform on, your little paramilitary uniform, you know, getting you ready for the Army at 8 years old in the morning. You put it on, you put your Bobcat badge on upside down, and you don't turn it right side up until you've done a good deed for a stranger. So it encourages you to go out and do good deeds for strangers, and you just love that. You're like, man, that's so cool. So one of these, which is the one that you're going to do that with for sure?
It's the Porcupine one. One of them just says Porcupine Freedom Scouts, and that's the membership badge.
Did you draw these pictures?
I drew these pictures, yeah.
Awesome, man. Yeah.
The idea, I think what we're going to say, although it's going to totally be up to the individual, but I think what I'm going to put
into
print.
No, we have rules. It's the anarchy rules.
We have rules.
Haven't you seen that spray painted on walls? Anarchy rules. There are rules. This is one of them.
It's not published in a manual anywhere. You actually have to travel the country viewing various pieces of graffiti and assemble the rules yourself.
Yeah.
But you know, Pork Scouts has rules too. Like Pork Scouts rule number 86, don't talk to cops. Everything you say is a weapon against you. I think what it's going to be is that you wear the porcupine upside down until you commit an act of civil disobedience that day, which means you break a nanny law, you commit a victimless crime, and then you can turn the badge over.
I don't think you'd have to commit a crime, though.
No, I think there's lots of things that are civil disobedience that are not crimes per se. Like I think Robin Hooding counts, which is filling people's parking meters so they don't get a ticket.
Yeah.
or maybe chalking the sidewalk is arguably a crime. In some places it's an ordinance, in some places it's not, but I think it's always sort of an act of sort of social disobedience. So yeah, anything like that. Your first act of activism that day. How about that?
There you go. So what customs could you have with upside downness, right side upness with the other ones? With the Shire Choir. I mean, although it's supposed to be daily.
Sing a song that day.
If you sing a lot, yeah, you could have that upside down until you sing a song of freedom to strangers. I really liked the footage of Ian Freeman doing that to Romney, Ian Freeman and Company. Did you see that?
I think it was Santorum, actually. Yeah.
It was the I'm covered with Santorum. Yeah, that one.
So, yeah, I think Honey Badger could be your first Bitcoin transaction of the day. Robin Hooding is obviously fulfilling a meter, saving somebody from the king's tariff. I'm not sure what Free State Project signer would be, because you can't really do that every day.
You should do it over and over and over.
Over and over until they're full.
Vote early and vote often. Yeah, then send him a bill. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. So on the record, you could do every day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you could do that also just by like having a mounted camera outside your house, probably. If you live on a busy intersection where cops beat people up a lot.
That's true. I mean, it doesn't have to be an act of police brutality. It could just be like, hey, look at this cop parked illegally in front of this coffee shop.
Yeah, you know? I don't know. You could just stand there and point. You don't even have to film. Hey, everybody, look at this cop. He's breaking the law. That might have more of an impact at some places than filming.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they do it all the time. There's whole Facebook groups devoted just to watching the way that cops park.
Yeah, yeah. They park like they just don't give a bit. So there's a big billboard near your house that says something about, or in your town, it says something about Bitcoin that you had something to do with. Tell me about that.
I think the billboard is actually owned by memory dealers, but it's the brainchild of Roger Ver, who is sometimes called Bitcoin Jesus. I think of him as the Bitcoin Johnny Appleseed because he really went around spreading it to people. And it is a picture of a honey badger, and it says Bitcoin, the honey badger of money.
That's awesome.
Which, like, it didn't really make any sense to a lot of people, you know, because it's like the internet was manifesting on a billboard, and the honey badger meme is not necessarily widely known except by, you know, young 20-somethings who watch YouTube.
Do you think anyone who's ever in like a Twitter daze ever looks up from their chromed robot to they're tweeting on and looks up at that and then just takes their thumb and tries to like press it, tries to press the billboard?
Press it, like click on it? I want more information.
Yes, I want more information. Yeah. Or tries to slide it with their finger.
Maybe. I mean, maybe one day billboards will do that. I mean, if we have these sort of Google headset things perfected, it should read your hand motions. You should be able to do that.
That sounds horrifying. It really does. It sounds horrifying because the government would have some fingers in it. I'm not getting any kind of implantable or probably even wearable computing until the government is I wouldn't say gone, but at least like where Facebook or where MySpace is, you know, to where it's got 100 million users and no one's logged in 6 years. So tell me about the Pork Scouts. Oh, are you going to tell me more about the billboard?
We can talk Pork Scouts. So this actually, like, I had this idea, but I didn't have people interested in it. So it actually, the first place it manifested was in my zombie novel. I wrote this book called Survivor Max, which is about a 12-year-old boy surviving alone in the zombie apocalypse. And the reason that he's able to do that is because his dad enrolled him in this group called the Pork Scouts, and they instilled in him the survival training that he needed to get food and water and shelter and survival training, but also kind of how to deal with people in a voluntary and peaceful way.
Does he meet a girl?
He's met a couple of girls already.
Yeah. Is it one of those cool young adult books without the state?
What do you mean cool young adult books?
I used to read books that were in the library when I was a kid. They had a stand of them, a young adult section. It was like a rack. And it was books written for kids like, you know, probably 12 to 16 that were
kind of like
children's books. But a lot of times, for some reason, the plot involved like a young boy and girl running away together or being lost together or being away from their parents together and like getting by. There was one about the museum that my wife read and she loved it too. And we can't remember who wrote it or what it was. It was like two kids that go live in a museum and it's not Night at the Museum, not that horrible movie.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like that. I mean, there are characters in the sequel who are like still trying to build a government and still trying to hold on to that. And so Max is sort of taken into custody against his will and has to escape.
Max is the kid.
Yeah.
So, you know, Timothy Leary said that the TV show The Monkees did more to change America for the better than anything, including LSD, because the Monkees, I don't know if he said that, but he said it was very important because the Monkees was the first TV show that had young people existing happily, not supervised by adults. First TV show ever.
Yeah,
like
I could, I mean, definitely, like, I was a big fan of You Can't Do That on Television, and that was definitely a show where the adults were omnipresent. Like, the producer of the show was there interrupting the show, telling them they can't do things.
Was that part of the Super Sloppy Double Dare?
Yeah, it was show. Nickelodeon. Yeah. It wasn't actually Double Dare, but it was the same network.
The guitar player in my band, Bomb, was worked on Super Sloppy Double Dare and was often on camera getting things dumped on him.
Yeah?
Yeah, they filmed it in Philly, and that's where he was. So anyway, back to Max.
So the Pork Scouts are essentially these kids who are they're homeschooled, they're raised by libertarian parents. They all have sort of like they've been raised to pursue their own passions, and so they're all very unique, and those passions affect their ability to survive and the ways that they're able. So like one of them really likes electricity and he's able to generate electricity and just stuff like that. And so it is a zombie story, and it is about survival training, but it's also sort of about, you know, libertarianism and sort of about young adults sort of coming of age. And, you know, it's all of those things. But the Pork Scouts are there sort of as a social – for social cohesion in zombie apocalypse, right? Because there has to be a juxtaposition between them and the authoritarians in the public school. I guess that's the main sort of tension, at least in the second –
because to have a book, really to have a good story, there needs to be conflict. They say conflict is the essence of drama. That's kind of an underlying like screenwriting rule. And you know, I would love to see a story where there's no adults and there's no opposition, but it'd be a very boring, happy story.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of, we always joke, like, what is fiction going to look like in LibPair? What are movies and romantic comedies going to look like in LibPair? And I don't, my problem is always, there's going to be no conflict.
Well, they're going to be period pieces about, tell me, Daddy, about back before LibPair.
Yeah, they're going to be like war stories. We're going to keep telling the story of the collapse of Leviathan will be the story of...
I think the subject of movies for the next 30 years. I think there will be conflict in LibPair. I actually think LibPair will be a really noisy place. I think there'll probably be disagreements among neighbors. You know, you can talk all day long about how, you know, if everybody has their own, you know, 40 acres of land and blah blah blah. But you know, what if the guy upwind from you is constantly, you know, I don't know, like making lead or something, or doing some industrial process that really stinks bad but isn't damaging, or you know, he's always having parties and you're trying to sleep. Who knows? It's gonna be noisy. There's gonna be conflict.
I mean, if you look at movies now and you look at media now, I mean, the most LibPair stuff is like romantic comedies.
I was just gonna say, so it's like, you know, the conflict will be like, it'll be more like sitcoms than like war movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be like roommates getting in arguments. All right, we'll be back. Freedom Fiends.
Worms.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
This is Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster. Yes, that is my wrestling name, the Iron Hamster.
Iron Hamster?
Yeah. You know, I wanted to clarify something I said today in the Freedom Fiends. The name of the episode was something like, hackers are more important to liberty than guns. And I feel like I didn't really fully explain that. I just want to make a little addendum here to say that. Basically, what I was saying is the right to free speech is more important than the right to bear arms. And a lot of gun people would argue me on that. But I'm not talking about wanting to give up one for the other. I wouldn't, you know, if you only had one. Here's what I think. I carry a gun. I'm a gun guy. I think having a gun is extremely important. But I think it's extremely important for personal defense against muggers. That's basically why I carry a gun. I don't think a gun is going to help me in a confrontation with the government. I think the government will murder me if I pull out a gun. And, you know, I know that there are libertarians who, or, you know, small government people who value riflemanship a lot. And I think riflemanship is an excellent skill to have, but I don't think that there's going to be, you know, a second American Revolution that's successful. I think they'll just bring out the drones and it won't matter if you're 500 yards away. They'll be able to see you and kill you. And it's not really where we want to go. We don't want to fight them with their own violence. We want to fight them with
words. We
don't
want to fight them on their home turf.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just ask ask anyone who's ever fought Afghanistan in the last 2,000 years how that's going, fighting someone on their own turf, on their own playing field. I think that the answer is to educate enough people to the ridiculousness of government and just reduce the demand for it until it drowns itself in the bathtub. And here's why I say that to me, the right to free speech is more important than the right to bear arms. And you notice I'm not saying the First Amendment's more important than the Second Amendment, because those are things written down on paper. And the right to free speech is something innate in everyone's heart. And the right to bear arms is innate in everyone's heart. And if you practice them, you will be able to keep them with less hassle. And here's the thing. I practice free speech on a global level every single day of my life. I bear arms. I carry a gun every day of my life, but it's unlikely, you know, statistically, it's unlikely I'm ever going to have to pull that gun and shoot anybody in self-defense. But I use the microphone all the time, all day, every day. The microphone is more powerful to me in what I'm doing with my life than the gun.
Well, you know, the little conservative in my head is saying you're only able to use that freedom of speech because you have the freedom to bear arms.
Yeah, that's what most Fox News people would say. But I don't know that that's true. I mean, I guess it's not true because nobody ever shoots the government. You know, nobody ever has the line in the sand. You know, nobody ever says if this line in the sand is crossed, we're going to start shooting. Nobody ever does
that. Well, the line in the sand is a moving goalpost. As soon as the government crosses it, they just pick something else until they say the line in the sand is that I can have my gun. And then they say, well, then we want your ammunition. And then they say, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And they do the boiling frog kind of stuff because, you know, if guns had been as legal as they were, you know, 100 years ago to where you could mail order machine guns, you know, 75 years ago, you could mail order machine guns. You know, and all of a sudden today they enacted all the gun control there was today, people would start shooting. But since they've done the boiling frog thing, explain the boiling frog thing.
So this is not to be tried at home. And I don't think that it I don't think it's true, actually.
It's not true. But a scientist actually tried this.
I don't want to meet that guy. So allegedly, or the way that the proverb goes, is that if you throw a frog into a boiling pot, he'll jump out right away. But if you put a frog into a pot of cold water and turn the temperature up gradually, he will stay there until he boils to death. And so this is analogous to the idea of sort of creeping fascism or creeping statism, where if they had proposed the government that we had today at the Constitutional Convention originally, nobody would have signed it. But because it's been gradual over hundreds of years, nobody notices the pot of boiling water.
Thank you. Very succinct, Davi. And we'll be back with more telling y'all what's wrong with you and why we're right soon.
After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com. That's michaelwdean.com.
Good evening, my fellow
worms. I know some things I don't know.
I'll be back with more later on.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
The stato sperimentato.
We have a
voice in.
The United States government presents
no vision can grow.
crash.
Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Estos por su parte consideran
to provide guidance to mankind.
Go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
Bye for now.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Welcome back to Chapter 2 of the Diet of Worms that is the Freedom Fiends, Episode 399. Of the unauthorized autobiography of Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster, joined tonight by Davi Barker.
Hey, I got to throw this out there. You told me to Google the EVRE20 mic for images, and I scrolled down, and like maybe 10 rows down, there's you holding the mic.
That's kind of funny. I like it.
So yeah. I'm going to use this photo. I'm going to use this photo for a pin.
Yeah. You were asking me, now, you're making a pin, a merit badge for radio, and you want a picture of a microphone, and you said, you were smart. You did what most people don't do. Most people, I say everyone should ask me before they do anything. And that sounds ridiculous, but everybody should
ask. I say that about commercials all the time.
Yeah. Everybody should ask me before they buy a computer or any sound gear, at least. Because people usually are really disappointed and spend way more money than they need to. And then I tell them, you should have got the blah, blah, blah. And then they end up getting that and trying to sell their other stuff. And, you know, they get a new computer and they don't ask me. And I would tell them to get Windows 7, but they get Windows 8 and it's horrible and they don't like it. It's like a virus, they say. So you did the smart thing, which is said, you asked, what did you ask me?
What mic would you put in a pin for a kid's first podcast?
And I said, I would not use...
Most people,
go ahead.
You would not use the Elvis mic. I don't know what it's called, but it's the one that everybody thinks to use that is wrong.
Yeah, it looks like the bump, the grill from a 56 Cadillac or something. It's kind of bulbous. And
It's the one from Back to the Future.
Yeah, and it's a mic that nobody ever in their right mind uses for talk radio because it doesn't have – it's not a very good mic, actually. It was like the best mic available for, you know,
a few – doing the best with what they had at the time.
Yeah, just like who did I say that about?
You said that about Hunter S. Thompson and about Timothy Leary. I'd like to say it about Douglas Adams. I think Douglas Adams was doing the best with what he had at the time.
Well, he's still alive, though. Maybe you can turn him
full on. No, he's not.
Really?
He died like 10 years ago.
Oh. Well, Scott Adams is still alive. The guy who does Dilbert. Maybe you can turn him full on.
Well, that's still stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Scott Adams.
The guy who does Dilbert is a great candidate for ANCAP.
Brewer, patriot, and cartoonist. Yep. So... yeah, everyone uses this. Everyone, you know, when you hear an ad on radio, like, and go to our site and click on, you know, like when people
click on the gold microphone,
click
to get
on
your
the microphone,
free
yeah,
flowers
yeah.
on Mother's Day or whatever.
It's,
yeah,
it's always that stupid Elvis mic, and no one uses that on talk radio. And what 99% of radio stations in the world that have money for equipment have is an Electrovoice RE20, which is a giant mic. It's about 2.5 inches in diameter. It's ugly as sin. It's the color is kind of this like beige green. It's the same color as American Army uniforms in Vietnam, like cross.
It looks like it was issued by Starfleet. That's what it looks like. Yeah. It looks like a Star Trek mic.
I think it looks like it was issued by the military. It looks very utilitarian.
Well,
and it is.
That was, I think, the aesthetic that Gene Roddenberry was going for.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can.
It's navies in space.
Yeah, he wanted to make fun of the Vietnam War, but couldn't, so he had to put it in space and call it something else. But yeah, the RE-20, I mean, you can drive nails with it, literally. It is solid steel. It weighs several pounds. It's really clunky. It's so big in diameter, you have to buy a special shock mount for it. It's the best mic in the world for talk radio. Now, here's the thing. The mic I'm using, the RE-20 costs about $500, and the special mount for it costs about $100. But and I have one, but I'm not using it. I'm using a lighter mic, Shure Beta 57A, which is about $130, which to me sounds as good as that mic, but it's a lot lighter, so I can move it around a lot more and not suffer from my neck hurting as much. But the thing about the RE-20 is, first of all, it's been used in talk radio since the 60s to the point where it sounds like what people think talk radio should sound like. Like, it is the sound of talk radio. And the other thing is, it's not the best mic in the world, but it's the best mic in the world for talk radio, for any radio station that frequently brings in guests who've never been on radio, because it compensates for so much bad mic technique. It's got, I mean, you can be like 5 inches off it to the right and it still sounds good, but somehow it doesn't pick up room noise very much. It's like magic. I don't know what they did. It's got something to do with those vents on the side. And it also doesn't have a lot of proximity effect. Most mics, when you get really close to them, you get more bass response. And like that one, this one doesn't have that much either. But a lot of mics, if you get too close to them, they get a lot of bass response, which can be useful as a technique in singing, but it's not really something you want in talk radio if you have different people coming in to be interviewed every day who've never been on radio. So also, that mic is used in movies to like show to be a shortcut for talk radio. Like when you have a scene in a movie that's in a radio station, someone's being interviewed, that's the mic they use. Like, even if they're not being mic'd with it, they're being mic'd above with unseen condenser boom mics, but that's the mic they look like they're talking into, because that's what people expect for talk radio. I don't know why everyone uses that dorky Elvis mic, because no one uses that in talk radio. It would be a horrible mic for talk radio. So you
think they would know better. Like, if this has been the mic that's been used since the 60s, you'd think all these people who are in radio would look at their websites and say, hey, you know, I haven't actually seen one of those mics in years.
Yeah. Well,
although it's sort of funny, like the save icon on a lot of websites still looks like a floppy disk. And we're reaching a point where the kids using the computers have never seen a floppy disk. So I don't know what they think that's a symbol of.
Oh, they still call, I mean, a lot of things transfer over like they still say in when NEMA was doing TV news, they're not using tape anymore. Everything's on hard drives. But they'd say, you know, go get a SOT, which is SOT, which stands for sound on tape. That means go get some video of a man on the street. Go get a SOT, you know. They still say that.
Yeah.
You know, you say in recording, there's no tape used in most recording studios now, but you still say, you know, do you want the effects to print to tape or do you want to add them in post? You know, the term is print to tape. And the software interface for recording and mixing software and for video editing software still emulates a lot of things from, you know, recording on tape and recording on and filming on film.
Yeah, I mean, it's the terminology, right? It is in the culture longer than the technology itself.
Yeah,
and of course. That's to be expected, I think.
You know, I think that Elvis mic being the icon for talk radio, it probably doesn't go back to that mic being in talk radio, but it probably goes back before the internet. There's actually, you know where it may come from? I actually have a picture up on my corkboard of, what's that guy's name, DJ? The guy who like challenged, who like invented investigative journalism. They made a movie about him with Robert Downey Jr. You know, the movie, the Smoke-Filled Room guys, you know what I'm talking about, from the 50s?
I don't know. No, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. I'm spacing on it. But there's a really famous picture of him sitting in front of a mic, kind of like that, an old RCA mic, old ribbon mic. Edward R. Murrow. Thank you, DJ.
I know that name. I don't know anything about him. Why do I know that name?
You don't know Edward R. Murrow? He's he kind of invented the idea of journalistic integrity on radio and TV. It really didn't exist before him so much.
Huh.
Yeah.
Integrity didn't exist. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So tell me about the hero's journey. Speaking of storytelling, what is the hero's journey?
Yeah, well, I think the best sort of most familiar example for people is Luke Skywalker from Star Wars. Star Wars is a very formulaic expression of the hero's journey, but it's essentially the hero is born to modest circumstances and he is discontent, and then an advisor or a guide of some kind removes him from his circumstances, mentor. Takes him on an adventure. A mentor takes him on an adventure that transforms him in such a way that he confronts the shortcomings he had in his humble upbringing. And then he returns home after the success of the adventure, a changed man, and in that sense can never truly return home.
That's really good. That was the really good short form of it. Yeah, it's a formula for storytelling that's used in writing and especially in Hollywood films. Once you really know it and recognize it, it's really hard to watch Hollywood films without feeling
everywhere.
A little bit cheated.
You know what I do to keep it entertaining is I predict the ending of movies, and I sort of like I gauge the formulaic nature of a movie by how quickly I can predict the ending.
Yeah, but a lot of times the hero's journey also has a red herring where you think that the hero thinks he's questing for in the beginning is not what he ends up questing for by the end.
Yeah, or it's sort of clever in a way.
Yeah.
Like he thinks that it's one thing and it turns out to actually be another thing, and it has more to do with his confidence than with his ability. And it is usually sort of an outward expression of an internal struggle.
You know, another thing about the mentor, he's usually played by somebody who used to be at the top of the game. All right, if you just want to cut to jokes, I'll do my hero's journey long form in the next short segment. What I was going to say is the mentor is usually played by an older black man, and it's usually Morgan Freeman.
Oh, okay.
Even in the movie, even in movies that don't have actors, where he like the Penguin movie that he narrates, he's still the voice of God in that thing.
What Penguin movie? Are you talking Happy Feet?
March of the Penguins.
I didn't know he was in that.
He's the narrator.
Okay.
Isn't he?
I have no idea.
March of the Penguins. Penguin is how you say penguin in French.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was a film that was like, it was made in France, and it was like kind of a National Geographic type film in French, and it really didn't have a plot. And then an American film company bought it and re-edited it to have the Penguins like have a hero's journey arc. And then they had Morgan Freeman edit it and became a huge hit.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, the hero's journey, I mean, like, even though it's formulaic because it's so kind of quintessentially human, or at least it's sort of a human fantasy. And so it does like resonate with people for good reason, I think.
I don't know if it's common because it's internal or if it's internal and that made it common. I don't know. You know, the movie Adaptation kind of makes fun of the hero's journey a lot. Have you seen that movie?
Who's the actor in Adaptation?
Nicolas Cage playing two people, two twin brothers.
I don't think I've seen it.
It kind of tears it apart, and he goes to a seminar for learning the hero's journey in it. He's the screenwriter in the movie, writing the movie. And he says, you know, what if I don't want to have my people learning lessons? What if they just, stuff happens? The guy's like, that'd be a very boring movie.
You are destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving. You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Hey, there's some Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
It's the Freedom Fiends, and Davi Barker and I are discussing The Hero's Journey, which is the kind of contrived way of doing things that Hollywood movies do. But it's cool. It's good to know, especially if you want to break the rules. You have to know the rules. So Davi gave the short form of it. I'm going to give the long form of it. Hero's Journey, three acts.
Hit me.
Three acts. First act short, second act long, third act short. Generally, in a you know, 2-hour movie, first act is 30 minutes, second act is 60 minutes, third act is 30 minutes. Adjust accordingly on length of movie. So in the first 5 or 10 minutes, you meet the hero and you find out his problem. He has a problem. He has to solve the problem. Without that problem solved, you don't have a story. The whole movie is him solving that problem. You know, it can be, we got to save grandma's farm. It could be, we got to kill that shark. It could be, we have to win the dodgeball tournament and save the gym. A lot of times it's some variation on save grandma's farm. We got to raise.
There's a disturbance in the force.
Yeah. We got to raise $100,000 by next week. So he originally, the hero is asked to solve this problem by society. Someone in society or some group of people ask him, they call him to greatness. And he initially always refuses the call. He says, nah, I don't want to do that. I'm just a blah, 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 or something. Or he doesn't think he can do it, or something's stopping him from doing it. And then something changes, something happens that makes him have to accept the call. And suddenly he's willing to do it, but he's not yet ready. He's not powerful enough in some way. So this mentor comes along and offers to train him. And sometimes he'll again refuse the call. He may refuse several calls, but he initially refuses the call, period. And the mentor is usually an older person who used to be at the top of the game that the younger person is entering into. But he can't do it anymore because he has some infirmity. He's either an alcoholic, or he's lost a limb, or he was frightened, or someone died because
he was injured in a boxing match.
Yeah, yeah. So he becomes the mentor and the trainer of the hero. He can't physically still do what he's doing anymore, but he has the knowledge that the hero is lacking and the ability to pass on the knowledge and also teach the hero how to be brave enough to confront the journey he has. So he goes through this training period with him that often in movies is represented as a montage, because they try to compress a lot of time and action into a short amount of time and play music under it. And South Park made fun of that with that song, "You Gotta Have a Montage." So he goes through the whole montage and then he's trained, but he's not quite yet ready to go fight the battle. So something else has to happen, and it's usually the mentor giving some sort of amulet or MacGuffin or physical pendant or something that seems meaningless at the time in the end of the first act, but somewhere in the third act becomes very important. So
a ring from a Cracker Jack's box.
Yeah, yeah, that he can whistle and call up ICBM missile launches or something. So he's given, what's the name for that thing, DJ? The pendant, the talisman. Yes, he's given a talisman. And he also, sometimes the hero goes on his own, but he often assembles a team. And that's also part of the training montage sometimes, or the training sequence, is assembling a team of ragtag misfits. And a lot of times they don't have any skill directly at what they're trying to do. They come from diverse backgrounds, but they each have one piece of the missing puzzle that'll work in this team. And they go through the training with him. And the first act usually ends with the team having some sort of blowout. It comes from, this is something it's said to be internal from caveman days of, like, you have to sit around, you like, before you go out to the hunt, you have to sit around the fire and tell war stories. So they have this like telling of stories, and sometimes it's they go to a strip club and get drunk and get arrested or something. They do something to like blow off steam before going into the second act. And when the team is assembled, okay, this is another, not necessarily the hero's journey, but in movies, this is the hero's journey. Is when the team is assembled and trained, you see a scene where they're walking in semi-slow motion in their uniforms toward the camera. You know, if they're girls who are going out on the town, they're dressed up like strumpets. If they're astronauts, they're dressed like astronauts. If they're cowboys, they're dressed like cowboys. But that symbolizes the end of the training and the team becoming coherent and ready for battle. And they are walking in semi-slow motion toward the camera. We're about to go to the break here in about 30 seconds, so I'm going to end Act 1 of The Hero's Journey here, and we'll come back with Act 2 and 3 of The Hero's Journey on The Freedom Fiends. And the mentor is usually played by Morgan Freeman. Worms. Worms!
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, the invigorating alternative to those other late night shows.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends. And we do not see dysfunction everywhere, only in the government. Everything's the government's fault. You know, Davi, in on the Freedom Fiends blog, the default category that's assigned if you don't assign a category is, I wonder if the government is behind this. So if you go to my post about lightning hitting in my backyard, at the bottom it says, I wonder if the government is behind this.
Well, clearly.
They would if they could.
It's HARP or something, right?
Yeah,
it's chemtrails.
They would if they could. I don't think they can, but yeah, they would if they could. So we're talking about the hero's journey.
Act 2.
We were up to Act 1. Okay, Act 2. Sometimes the delineations between acts are very clear. Sometimes they're not. And you were surprised that like it's so structured for film, and it really is. And of the things I described in Act 1, only two of them are film-specific. One is the montage, and one is the assembled team in their uniforms walking in semi-slow motion toward the camera to signify the end of Act 1. But everything else in there is in the hero's journey, in books, in storytelling. So Act 2 is basically, and in film, it's often like down to the page. Like literally, screenwriters writing for Hollywood will, you know, they'll write a 90-minute screenplay and realize, wait, Act 2 ended one page too quick. I have to make it one page longer and make Act 2 one page shorter. Like literally, in a lot of Hollywood movies, you could hold a ruler up to it by minute and know, you know, when the mentor is going to appear, when this is going to happen, when that's going to happen. So Act 2.
Well, the convention for script writing is each page should be a minute of dialogue.
Should be a minute of screen time.
Yeah.
Whether it's dialogue or not. Yeah, that's generally what it is. So Act 2 is where the meat of the movie happens. It's where most of the story happens, and it's most of the time of the movie. It's the same length as Act 1 and 3 combined. And generally, it involves an actual physical journey into a special world. The hero starts out in the normal world, goes to the special world, and as you said, you know, returns to the normal world with something that improves society somehow. You know, the definition of a hero literally is someone who risks all for a stranger. And the person they're risking, the hero is risking things for, is not always a stranger, but they often are. And let's see. So Act 2, they're headed toward something. The real battle act is the real battle. It happens in Act 3, but Act 2 is usually going toward the battle in Act 3 physically. And sometimes it's not physically. Sometimes it's, you know, he doesn't leave his town, but he goes into some special underworld that exists in his town. And
well, that's like all of Lord of the Rings, though.
Yeah, they go toward the tower. They go toward the castle. And generally, the hero and his assembled team will go through various various tests to become stronger. Like, his training is over to allow him to start the journey, but he's still not there yet to be able to do the battle, what's called the battle in the innermost chamber, which happens in Act 3. And it's a lot of things of, like, smaller tests. Sometimes he fails them. Sometimes he wins them. And he's going toward some distant goal. You know, sometimes he knows what it is. Sometimes he doesn't. And the team, they become more coherent as a team throughout Act 2. And another thing with the hero's journey, generally in movies, but not always in books, but sometimes in books, there's one character on the team who is a complete idiot who you think is going to get everyone killed. But in Act 3, they somehow save everybody with a special talent you didn't know they have or didn't know was a talent. That guy used to usually be played by Steve Buscemi until he became a leading man from Boardwalk Empire. But yeah. So, you know, Act 2 is basically just things happening. It's just going towards, you know, the battle in the innermost chamber. And at the end of Act 2, generally, end of Act 2 or beginning of Act 3, they usually get really close to where the final battle is going to be, and they encounter a gatekeeper of some sort. It's a literal gatekeeper in Wizard of Oz. Nobody sees the wizard.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah. You know, and the hero has to best that guy in some small fight. It's usually verbal. And
in Labyrinth, it's the door on the right. One of the doors always tells the truth, and one of the doors always tells a lie. Which door will you take?
Yeah, yeah. And so the hero, you know, has this gatekeeper who's keeping him from going any further, who's an enemy, who becomes a friend after being bested in some verbal, you know, like, what is the airspeed of a swallow kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that guy becomes his friend and usually comes up again later and helps him in some way, some secret way that you don't expect, you know, tosses him a weapon when he's about to be killed or something. So the hero finally gets to his goal and has what is called the battle in the innermost chamber. And it's usually literally in an enclosed area, a boxing ring or a corral or a courtroom. It's in or somewhere enclosed where, you know, both
an exhaust port.
Yes. The hero and the anti-hero are the size of a womp rat. The hero and the anti-hero, you know, and his nemesis are put against each other. They're fighting, and they usually fight until the hero is killed and you think he's dead. It fades to black. It goes to a commercial and he comes back and he's really just wounded in his shoulder and he gets up and fights valiantly and wins the battle. That's, you know, it's the Jesus, it's the resurrection. It's the Jesus thing. It's the, you want to,
it's Neo.
It's Neo. Yeah. Yeah. You know, they, oh yeah, that movie really follows all this closely. And then the hero, you know, gets the prize, gets the girl, gets some sort of knowledge to take back to society. And then there's the denouement, which is the last 5 minutes of it, where it's the anticlimax, you know, the climax of the movie or the story. Like if the movie ended at the climax, you'd go out in the street so dazed you'd get hit by a car. So the denouement is to kind of bring you down to earth, tie up loose ends, make you smile, tell a joke, maybe set you up for a sequel. Also, I forgot, somewhere in that battle, I did say this before, but somewhere in that battle in the innermost chamber or coming close to it, the Steve Buscemi weirdo character that you think is going to get everyone killed saves everybody somehow. So that's the hero's journey, man. That's it. That's the long form.
That's so many movies. It was more movies than I even thought that it was.
It's every movie,
but like,
man.
Yeah, I mean, Goonies comes to mind. Definitely Star Wars comes to mind. Matrix comes to mind. Yeah, it's all over the place. What is it? Spaceballs comes to mind.
Dodgeball. Dodgeball is an excellent version of it that kind of makes fun of
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
To the point where there's a thing called the Deus Machina. Is that how you say it? DJ would know. Mm-hmm. It's Latin for the God in the basket or the God in the
Deus.
Machine. It's like basically if you write yourself into a corner and can't get out of it, you have something magic at the end, save everything. And in the movie Dodgeball, there's
use Facebook
in Dodgeball when they get that big treasure chest full of money on the side of it in like kind of hard to read letters, like gothic letters. It says Desus Machina.
Really?
Yeah. And in, I mean, people deconstruct this and make fun of it. Like in the South Park movie at the end, when they're looking at their watches to synchronize their watches, on the watch, it says the ticking clock. And the ticking clock is a device used in movies. It's not always present in the hero's journey, but often is. And it's literally like, you know, it's a bomb you have to defuse with a ticking clock, or it's something, it's a race against time.
It's the deadline, yeah. UHF. Do you remember UHF, Weird Al's movie?
I saw that weird movie. That's a We Gotta Save Grandma's Farm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, totally.
We gotta save the TV station.
And there's literally a ticking clock. It's fundraiser PBS style ticking clock.
Yes, yes. Yep. So that's the hero's journey. There's a few variations on it. One is in really short form media, like TV commercials, like, you know, 30, 60, 90 seconds. There's often two acts, and it's usually like a punchline and, you know, a setup and a punchline, or a problem and a solution. And the thing you have to remember about advertising too, is this is something I heard on Ad Men, but I've always known this internally, is that an advertisement is an unspoken social contract, or an unspoken, we hate the word social contract. It's an unspoken contract with the viewer.
Unenforceable.
Yeah, it's a contract with the viewer that you will entertain them and they will listen to your message. But most commercials do a two-act format if there's any kind of story in them. It's like, you know, the housewife, like, my husband's going to leave me because I keep burning the steak. Try new steak-proof Burnham Steakums or something. You know, it's like the problem and the solution always.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple other variations of it. One is like the Pulp Fiction thing, where it's a bunch of semi-connected people who they're not tightly connected, but it's a bunch of different stories going on at the same time. There's also some weird stuff out of order in time in Pulp Fiction that I really don't like, because it doesn't work very well. Like Travolta's character is dead, and then he's alive, and then he's dead again. And it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It seems like a mistake, but like the movie Memento travels forward in time and backward in time in a really cool way. It's hard to figure out the first time through, but it's like, I think it's the color stuff is moving forward and the black and white stuff is moving backward. And then there's
it's the other way around.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's cyclical stuff. Pulp Fiction is cyclical too, I think. I know that the movie, with Kevin Spacey, Magnolia is cyclical. Like the end of the movie is the beginning of the movie, but those movies all still have a hero's journey in them. Yeah.
So I guess the next question is, does this occur in nature? Like, is the hero's journey a story because we've experienced it and it's sort of part of our DNA, or is it like something that storytellers have made up to kind of like fantasize and pacify us with this sort of entertaining story?
I don't know. Cause you know, I've thought about that about music before. And I think that the reason that 4/4 music, like rock and roll, is so popular is because, you know, your heartbeat is 2/4, you know, it's 2/4/4s back to back, or 2/2/4s back. And having sex is 4/4 if you do it right. So it's a base.
And I'll have to check.
And walking down the street, you know, is 2/4. So a lot of music is in 2/4, and music that's in like, you know, 7/16 feels weird to people unless they're into weird stuff. 3/4, like a waltz, feels natural because when you're dancing and leaning on somebody, you kind of go 1/2/3, you know, you kind of sway like that. So those are things that exist in nature. And I really don't know that the hero's journey exists per se in nature. I kind of think it's a contrivance. And there are movies that deconstruct that, like Adaptation is all about what's wrong with the hero's journey. Mm. It's a really cool movie. You've seen it?
I don't know. It sounds familiar, but I couldn't testify to it.
You should watch it, man. It's great. It's on Netflix. Watch it tonight. We'll be back with the redemption in the third act, another part of the hero's journey.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. And yes, we're broadcasting this message into space.
This is the Central Scrutinizer.
I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to
torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
This is Michael Dean, flawed hero on the Freedom Fiends. It's time for the redemption in the third act, which is something you always want to have in a hero's journey. I mispronounced two things, DJ. How do you say it? Deus ex machina and denouement. Okay, there we go. So you had a question, Davi, about the hero's journey. Some people say that what?
They say that it's a contrivance, that it doesn't happen in nature. But they also say that it makes heroism unattainable and in that sense is actually sort of destructive to virtue in the world, if that makes sense. Because it tells the person, no, you can't be a hero until you're called, and you can't be a hero until the mentor tells you that you've learned the Force.
I've heard Stefan Molyneux say that. I've heard him say, it's kind of a complaint on like needing an authority figure. But you know what? Stefan Molyneux's speeches, the better ones, follow the hero's journey. And he probably would hate to hear that. But
wow.
I could analyze them. I guarantee they have redemption in the third act. They have a
Then it's on purpose. That guy did a lot of literary. He's very educated when it comes to theater, and because he was a theater major before
follows the hero's journey. He states a premise. He states a problem. He spends most of the talk talking about various aspects of the solution of the problem, examples of fights people have had with the government, problems people have had, ways they've dealt with it, and then he sums it up and has a redemption in the third act. I'm sorry, Stefan Molyneux, you follow the hero's journey quite well.
I'm gonna have to look into this, and you've blown my mind a little bit.
Good storytelling almost always has it. You know, I mean, a term paper usually has it. A term paper has three acts. It has, you know, it has your thesis, it has your research, and it has your conclusion. That's a three act format, my friend.
Yeah. Okay. I get you. You know, it occurs to me all superheroes follow the hero's journey, although that's probably right in the name, superhero.
Oh,
But what do you mean when you say that they're flawed?
Well, heroes are usually flawed for a couple reasons. One, it makes them so the average man, the average woman can relate with them. If they're perfect in every way, you can't relate with them because they're like, I'm not perfect. But, you know, they...
So that's the opposite. That's the opposite of what I'm saying. That's saying that they're deliberately designed in a way to be approachable, to be attainable.
Yeah. And really, here's what a hero has to have, or even an anti-hero has to have. A story absolutely has to have somebody who's likable. Maybe not even likable, but you have to care what happens to them. That is a major flaw in a lot of storytelling from people who could be good storytellers but aren't, is they write people, you don't care what happens to them. You got to care what happens to them, man.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. Like, I'm writing Survivor Max. I was not conscious of writing a hero's journey, but I'll bet that it's so much in the storytelling DNA that I did it unintentionally.
Yeah. And you said he doesn't have a mentor, but he does because his dead dad's memory and the training of the Pork Scouts.
Yeah, he has flashbacks. He has flashbacks about the Pork Scouts.
The mentor is often dead, or sometimes he dies during the story, but his voice appears in the memory of the hero in the battle in the Universe Chamber.
Use glows in the dark at the award ceremony.
Yeah, use the Force. Use the Force. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, man.
I mean, I guess the father does sort of play a role in the sense that he's a zombie throughout some of the book.
Well, you can blame Homer for all this. I think that was the first written example was the Odyssey. Yeah.
The Odyssey. Yeah. Maybe.
Yep.
He definitely does go away and come home a changed man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And, you know, I don't really care whether it's a contrivance or not, because saying something's a contrivance means it's not good means we should all be living in ditches poking berries up our nose because it's
no.
It's,
I think the criticism is if it is a contrivance, then it doesn't describe real heroism and therefore it doesn't teach us to be heroes.
Well, it's hard to describe real heroism in 90 minutes. And the hero's journey is a shortcut to wrap it around. You know, somebody once said, the best writing is poetry over math, and if it's done right, you don't see the math.
That's really good.
Thanks, Davy Barker. It's been a good time on the Freedom Fiends.
Happy Edict of Worms.
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 This has been Michael Dean After Dark. I hope we've helped calm the hamster in your brain and left you in a better place than where we found you. We'll be here 5 nights a week, same time and channel. In the meantime, go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening. Good night.